whipped again with pace. It's in! Spurs salvation! Harry Kane leads the party! And they will escape from the bridge with a point. That is one heap of Tottenham joy.
Hello and welcome back to Tottenham Podspur. This season of Podspur is brought to you by Fanatics. Are you in need of some fresh new Spurs merch? Click the link in this episode description to order some new Spurs gear via our Fanatics partner link. And not only will you get the hookup, but a portion of your purchase will help support your favorite Tottenham pod. Available on all of your favorite podcast platforms, you can also interact with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and our Facebook page, along with our website and blog at podspur.com. There will be a link tree in this episode description with all of those links, so please follow the show, follow all the guys, and click subscribe to join the conversation and never miss a Podspur. Hey there, and thanks for joining. For context, we're recording this on Sunday, September 4th. At about 9 p.m. Eastern time. I'm your host, Matt, and I've got a full house in the virtual Podspur studio. We've got Scott in North Carolina. We've got Jeremy in Albany and my good friend Dustin in Bowling Green. Jeremy, let's start with you. It's been a few since you've been on, but you had a trip across the pond, got to see the Southampton and Wolves matches, I believe.
Yep, I was at the stadium for both of those matches. It was phenomenal. I mean, honestly, phenomenal. That was my first time actually getting to see Tottenham live. And our stadium is colossal. And you know what's incredible? The thing that really struck me is, I mean, how many people do we fit in our stadium?
Like 62,000.
60, yeah. It's like a really intimate setting at that game. I mean, you can feel the camaraderie there. It's really amazing. It really is.
I know when they designed it, that was something that they intentionally wanted it to be as many people as I can fit in there, but they also wanted it to be as intimate and as like they wanted every single one of those fans to feel like they could be a part of that match and it's not just some distant thing.
No, they hit the nail on the head. So I got to see two wins, one where we won easily and one where we did the Spursy stress you out type thing. But I'm back, so I'm glad to be joining you guys.
Jeremy, what did you make of the whole difference in UK sports versus US where you can't bring your beer to your seat with you?
I actually liked it. Not so much of the beer in the seat thing. I think it is what it is. I can totally understand the logistics of not having that many drunk men watching a football match and throwing it on the field. But the lack of stimuli coming from the stadium itself during the match, like the lack of music and sound and stadium driven chants and all of that, that's what really blew me away. I mean, we just in the south stand where I was sitting, we stood the entire time and it's singing and chanting and that's it. So I loved it. Don't get me wrong. I love going to NFL games too, but it's an entirely different beast. It really is.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Yeah. We've got Dustin in Bowling Green. Dustin, what's up, man?
Not much. We were talking about college football started early. So I did pull the late shift. My beloved Hilltoppers at WKU played in Hawaii last night. So kickoff was 11 o'clock Bowling Green time. And my wife and I did manage, actually she beat me. She stayed up and I think she made it into the third quarter. I said at halftime, we're up 21-10. Let's just go to bed and pray for the best. And we won 49-17. So I apparently didn't miss anything other than some scores.
I think I had been asleep for 2 hours by then. So I applaud you.
But it's the long weekend. I am enjoying having most of tomorrow off as well. We have our school is in Kentucky. And you know how high school's in across the U.S. Like every state has like classes for the different sports and all that. Kentucky doesn't do that for anything but football and track. But they toying with some of the ideas and a couple of the other sports. And our soccer team is actually playing in the opening round of the 2A state tournament tomorrow at home. So that's kind of exciting. So I have that to look forward to tomorrow. So it is kind of work on a day I'm supposed to be off, but it's fun work. That's for sure.
Nice. Good stuff. Go Dragons, right?
Absolutely. Go Dub C.
There you go. And we're also joined by our good friend Scott down in North Carolina, who is watching his Noles, who just took a 7-3 lead into the half versus LSU and with college football kicking off. Scott, how are you feeling? How's your blood pressure right now?
It's not bad. I don't want to bog it down too much. We should have just kicked the field goal instead of going for it on fourth down, but it's fine. I'm not going to complain. He does it every time, our coach. It's a data thing, and you know me, so I'm not going to complain too much about that. So no, it could be worse.
I don't necessarily have a college football affiliation by any means, but I do have a Florida Seminoles like bucket hat with, you know, the string one, the beach one. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, I'll pull for you in this one, and I never really liked LSU, so
we're playing them in New Orleans, and it's actually 50-50 Florida State fans and LSU fans. So I'm impressed.
I just find it very interesting with college football that, you know, you play almost your biggest game of the season, team their biggest game of the season in the first week, so your season can be either all but done at the end of the first week, or, you know, you could be marching on to new heights. But week one is very, very big for college football, and I've just always found that very interesting. But let's jump into the round football, the football across the pond. It was a two-match week for Spurs with the one-all draw versus West Ham on Wednesday. I didn't get to watch much of that as I was in my professional development meetings after school. Every other Wednesday, I have to stay late. So I tried to watch as much as I could, but we were getting trained on these fancy new smart board things that we're getting. So,
You guys are just now getting those?
No, a different one. We have smart boards. These are these clear touch TV panels interactive things.
We've got some of those at our school too. They're pretty neat.
They're pretty cool, but I couldn't get one out of the library into the back of my truck, so I'm not too worried about it.
Not yet.
Jeremy, what did you make of what you were able to see from that match?
Yeah, so like I was telling you before we started recording, I saw the first half, and then I kind of had a broken up experience with the second half. And I thought the first half we played pretty well. We'll get on to today and some of the positives about today, but some of the things we'll talk about today, I felt like we did well in the first half against West Ham. We had a lot of the ball, much more than we did against Nottingham Forest, ironically. West Ham looked pretty flat, and we were able to pass and move the ball decently, but we only scored the one goal. So, you know, I remarked to somebody as that half went on, you start to get that feeling when we miss some opportunities to put the second one in that we might come to regret it. And then, of course, I wasn't able to watch the second half, but as I was tracking other people's comments, it seemed like maybe we really kind of lost the front foot and maybe sat back too deep and things seemed to go not so well. So I wish I could comment more on what happened because that is why I'm here to talk about it. But I'm not sure. It just sounds like kind of we fell maybe too deep and kind of got back into the disjointed lack of flow that we've been seeing this season.
No, right on. In that one, Bissouma did get the start. I did see a lot of cheap giveaways by him, obviously feeling his way into the squad. And then, you know, the old quote does stand true. All form goes out the window in derbies. And, you know, especially with two teams that are going to go at it like Tottenham and West Ham. Dustin, what did you make of that one?
So I was in a similar boat. I watched it on replay. We were at school, and I had the commentary up on FotMob. Or no, I have it actually on a Flash Score, which actually has more in-depth commentary. And, you know, the first half seemed really good. And then, you know, we had a faculty meeting and I was through it. And I got home and I watched the last 10 minutes and I started it. As soon as it was over, I actually rewound it and restarted it off. And first half looked good. We were out high flying. You know, I made some notes in here. Like Emerson looked like potent offensively. Perisic was putting in some nice crosses. We looked good. I wrote for halftime, not bad. Love the boys were playing on the front foot, but still West Ham had some chances. And I said, we had to ratchet up the pressure in the second half. And then we proceeded to go out there and do exactly not that at all. So, you know, that's always good. When I said, hey, we just keep doing this, we'll be fine. And we did the opposite of that. The goal was so, so poor for us too. So bad. Like, there's so many people who made errors on that. That's what's frustrating. Like, if it's a single person error, you can kind of pinpoint that one person. But when it's just everybody making a mistake, it's like, what in the hell is going on?
Oh, I hear that. Scott, last season at West Ham, was that a win? I know that was a loss. So
yep.
That was a 1 point gained for the total, yep. Correct?
As painful as it was, yes.
And what were your thoughts quickly on that performance?
Well, the goal, honestly, Dustin, everybody was stupid. I don't think everybody made mistakes. It was like Lloris embarrassed himself with how he played the ball to play it out. And then everyone but Eric Dier was just turned off. Like, it wasn't a quality issue or a, you know, like tactical. It was like they just weren't plugged back in fast enough.
Yeah.
And then West Ham were on it from the jump. It was a foul throw, mind you. Should never have stood, but... it was terrible defending, and Suchek, of all people, gets on my fucking nerves. But
and he's too good for us to just let him make runs like that, just open.
Well, he's actually like he's been kind of off lately, but of course he would do that against us. It was just ugly. Like it, and I thought that we really struggled throughout the game to kind of build the ball up. And I've talked about this before, but it really showed its head with the way West Ham played against us, with Sanchez, Royale, Lloris had a bad passing game. Bissouma, you know, was kind of incisive with some of his passes, but he did give the ball away quite a bit. You could tell he was getting used to a new system because he's playing in, it's more of like a double pivot than a sitting midfield role like he did with Brighton. He's really good, but it's different. Like both, he got to read Højbjerg when Højbjerg goes forward and then vice versa. So it's just different. He'll be fine. And I was glad with the changes that we saw in the lineup against Fulham. I'll say that. It allowed us to progress the ball better than we were before. And some of that was injury with Romero versus Sanchez. But I liked having Longley out there. Not that I don't like Davies. I love Davies. But they're two different kinds of defenders, for sure.
Right. So let's get to some of those changes as we'll talk about yesterday's match now as we're talking about the 2-1 win over Fulham. Richarlison steps in for Dejan Kulusevski. Cesc goes back in for Perisic to get the start versus a former team. Clement Longley comes in at left center back, giving Ben Davis the rest. Christian Romero checks back in at right center back. And Hot Rod Bentancur back in the midfield. Jeremy, what did you think about this lineup? I think we were all kind of assuming we'd see Richarlison. I think this was the game, you know, looking at the schedule a week or two ago, that I think most Spurs fans earmarked as Richarlison's potential first start. Were you surprised that it was Deki that was rotated and not Son?
I don't know if I was surprised or not. I really have difficulty predicting what Conte is going to do. He's a man kind of marches to the beat of his own drum. But I will say that I think Son is really a player that needs to play his way back into form. I don't know that resting Son and having him sit on the bench is going to be the thing that gets him onto the goal sheet, so on the score sheet. So I was happy, I will say that, that it was Richarlison, Kane, and Son. And I don't know, since you mentioned Richarlison of the other players, I'll just say he was a beast. He really was. And it's not even, yes, he had, I think he had another assist. And that's right, isn't it?
Yes, he did have an assist.
Yeah. But the energy and the fitness levels and the fact that one of the things I really noticed that was amped up for us in the game was the high press. And anytime we would lose possession in the final third, rather than just sort of dropping back and waiting for them to take it into the midfield, where inevitably they'll normally pass through, Richarlison would be right back at it trying to get the ball. And he won the ball a lot, you know, after it was lost in the final third. And I think that was a huge aspect of what made the day successful against Fulham. You know, we could talk about the fact that it was 2-1 and it could have been more and all of that. That's how sports is. That's how soccer is. At some point that will average out. Our team is going to score a bucket load of goals at some point. They're coming. They really
absolutely
are.
Absolutely. I like what you said about Richarlison. Yeah. It was Conte said post-match, for me, he played in a massive way. He played very well with personality and with quality. And I just love, like you mentioned, the press and what he really brought to the squad with that.
Yeah.
Dustin, your thoughts on the starting 11 and, you know, were any surprises there for you?
No, I was really excited to see Clement Longley get a chance in the rotation. I think we really needed to see him. We had seen all of the other signings minus Jed Spence really get a full run out, and it was nice to see him. And I thought he played extremely well, which I'm sure will come on to some other topics that came up with Clement Longley and some Twitter banter and all that. But, you know, kind of coming on to Richarlison, like he was so good, and it's unfortunate that goal didn't stand because there was no more perfect way for him to cap his first Spurs goal by ripping off the shirt and taking the yellow card and saying, cry more. Like, there was not a better way. And actually, I came across a quote today that someone shared from Charlie Eccleshare, and he wrote this, and he said, he said on Richarlison, he said, Richarlison is already popular in Spurs' dressing room. Has been the case at all his previous club. While he's ferociously competitive on the pitch and often winding up opposition and pundits, off the pitch he's such more lighthearted, known for his kindness, liveliness, and endearing goofiness. The Tottenham players have really taken to Richarlison and their delight when they brought when I thought he had scored was partly a reflection on that. Like, Richarlison has just – I feel like he's just won everybody over. I know, Matt, you were somebody who was like, I'm not so sure about him because of the dark arts and all that, and I get that. I know some people will continue to be iffy of him. Not saying you, but other people will be iffy about him with the dark arts. But I will say this. Richarlison has been money well spent. He has, other than put the ball in the back of the net and it count, he's been spot on for us and the guy we've needed. And he's going to pay off huge for us because I know we have aspirations this year. So,
yeah, for sure. Our good friend Austin Bazan at ATX Bazan said, proud of everyone. Solid performance from the whole squad. Richarlison, the next king of the North. He also said, side note, want y'all's thoughts on Longley and if he should be starting. I feel his attacking mind fits perfect. So, Scott, I know you wanted to talk about Longley because you were very excited to see him in there. I got into some Twitter beef with people just saying, hey, let's pump the brakes on wanting Ben Davis completely away from this squad, which is the way people were phrasing it. I think it was a solid performance. It wasn't, you know, outstanding. He was actually our lowest or second lowest rated player in the game on the algorithm charts. But what were your thoughts on the Frenchman stepping in and getting his first start?
I think that he and Davies are just so different. I don't think they're very different defensively. You know, neither one of them are big and, you know, super strong in the air or physically strong. They're just positional and smart. You know, they read the game well. But in attack, Davies kind of carries it more, you know, goes on these underlapping runs, carries the ball forward on the dribble. He's not like a incisive passer. I don't remember the last time Davies even hit a long diagonal. Like, can you guys remember any? No. Which is not I'm not knocking him. It's just they're very different. Longley is the opposite. He's going to, you know, play a through ball, play it over the top. I can't wait to see him play with Kulusevski and play him over the top of those diagonals or Spence if that ever happens. Right. But I think that Longley is a good pair with Sess because I've talked about – I don't want to call them limitations because I love Sess and Young. But Longley next to Spence – or next to Sess and Young, excuse me, still has some passing ability and ability to stretch the opposition defense, whereas Sess and Young can kind of just run up field and Longley can distribute. And I like Longley better with Sanchez on the right side because it still gives us the ability to kind of move the ball forward, especially with Perisic with Sanchez, because the right side with Royale and Sanchez has just not been good, and that was what killed us against West Ham when Bissouma would give it away and wouldn't be quite as helpful in possession. You had Lloris pissing down his leg, and then Royale and Sanchez couldn't do it. Davies wasn't doing enough on the left side, so like having Longley as that option to progress the ball forward like a midfielder, I think it's great. It's nothing against Ben Davies. I love Ben Davies, but it's a different kind of option. It's exactly what we need to help support the midfield when the wingbacks don't necessarily support the midfield and build up like we've seen.
No, well said. Jeremy, you had a good tweet after the game about our captain quietly having a good season. Nothing he could do on the Mitrovic goal. It was an absolute laser. I think it took a bit of a deflection as well. But outside of that, he had a couple of really good diving saves late on in the top corner. Talk about Hugo and his performance.
Yeah, I think that Hugo, I was driving to work today thinking, or not today, but driving somewhere. I don't know how many better shot stoppers there are out there. I can't think of many. I mean, he's really incredible at stopping shots. And
absolutely,
the part that I love is that, you know, in a game like yesterday, when we actually did have most of the possession and there were very few shots, to have almost nothing to do for maybe 80 minutes and then to make a game, really a game-saving deflection, that's pretty good. Because goalkeepers will get into groups, but when you're doing nothing the whole game, that's what really scares you. So right. I love Lloris. I get the criticism of the fact that he's not great with his feet, but you know what? It's kind of old news now. I think he's been perfectly adequate. Yeah, I agree with you.
Good with that this season. Yeah,
I
except
agree.
West Ham. I don't know what happened.
Well,
he must have been on the bottle again. Like, I don't know what happened, but that was not good.
And yeah,
the worst thing about that was he just kicked out of bounds. So it's not like he directly led to the goal.
He did have that cheeky little like chip over the top of a Fulham attacker. Was that to Longley or to Sessegnon?
I forget.
He's known to pull one of those out.
Well, he did. He had a couple of other shaky moments against West Ham with the ball. Like I love him. I again, the criticism is not you know, there's no passion or ill will here. He had some other shaky moments against West Ham with the ball, which is fine. Just like, there's no problem. Conte asked him to pass the ball, so he passes the ball. And he's comfortable and he's confident. So shit's just going to happen when you do that. Like, there's a reason that not every club does it that way. So, yeah.
I just always think back to that pre-COVID Cruyff turn on the goal line. And I have nightmares. God. It replays in my mind.
Every time I hear Cruyff turn in Spurs, I think about Danny Rose Cruyff turning at the halfway line against Barcelona in the Champions League.
Isn't it strange, though, with our fan base, I don't know where this comes from or where we get this entitlement nature, because we haven't not had a very successful couple decades. But if we think there's any player out there in the world that could possibly improve a position, we feel like we need to go get that player and we can't be happy with what instantly. We have. I mean, it's
or
like
just get rid of who we have in that spot.
Yeah. Well, Lloris, I mean, how many goalies out there would you actually want to buy that would come in and be better than him right now with all of the leadership skills and everything he brings? I can't even relate to it. So that's what kind of prompted my tweet.
That's a very valid point. I do like Absolutely. That a lot. Christian Romero returned to the lineup, and you know, I'm a big Romero fan. I've also said on here a lot that some of his challenges worry me at times. It was demonstrated early. He picked up a very unnecessary and avoidable yellow card, and then he threw in a lazy shit half-ass tackle on Mitrovic before the goal.
That was terrible defending.
Yeah, it was almost Serge Aurier-esque in my book. Bonehead moments, and I think, you know, it was him getting back into it. But I think Romero struggled in this one.
He did. I'm sorry I interrupted you there.
Not worse.
To it now, it's what I do. But I don't know that he was fully up to speed, like you said. Like he was a little bit lacking some fitness. If you watch that whole, like, take it 30 seconds back before the goal, and he's almost in the opposing 18-yard box. He was really trying to push forward and be involved in the possession. We give the ball away cheap, and then he's busting his ass to get back. And I think he was just tired. It was a lazy challenge. And Dyer didn't exactly cover himself in glory with his little whatever the hell they teach them to do, turn your back and spread your legs like a ballerina. But that wasn't Dyer's fault. Romero really didn't challenge Mitrovic at all. And he just stood off him, and then Lloris had no chance.
Yeah. It's funny that we talk about this wasn't the stellar performance for Cody Romero, and yet he was the highest rated on FotMob of our three defenders.
See, I hate center backs. Defender ratings with those things, because he was good with the ball and he made a lot of passes, and you know, he makes tackles and interceptions, so he's always going to score well. And Longley is more passive, so he's never going to score as well in defense, at least. Yeah. But he was good. Don't get me wrong; like, he was still a good defender. He just had some moments that he doesn't normally have. And he didn't have the attacking moments. Actually, you know what? I know everyone has had their moment to shit on Sanchez over the years, but Sanchez is dangerous in attacking set pieces.
Oh, you're right.
More than Romero is. So
absolutely right.
He's got some value. But yeah, he was clearly rusty.
So that kind of takes us through the back line. Dyer did have the chance to score. Probably should have scored on that. And then he also had a pretty decent stat line. He was 5 for 5 on his long balls. His completion percentage was great. I think Mitrovic was going to be a tough ask. We kept him absolutely silent until that goal. And again, I think it was a shitty attempt by Romero, and then no cover from Dyer on it. So just a colossal fuck up on errors. But Dustin, let's kick it to you as far as your thoughts on Sessegnon as he came back into the starting lineup.
Sessegnon, I thought, was very good. I had a lot of, you know, notes on him, and now it's not one to recognize my face. Sessegnon, you know, I think, the 58th minute, he had that ball that was so close. The goal that wasn't for Richie was a nice ball. I think about the goal that wasn't for Richie. Sessegnon got the ball, shot it. There was the shout for handball, but he didn't stop. He just kept going and played that second ball into Kane. That was the goal, not the Richarlison goal. It was the goal that Kane scored. He just kept it going. And I was like, that's perfect. Like, you can't just, like, if we would have stopped, you know, Harry Kane missed a penalty last week. You know, it's possible that man who scores every time he kicks a penalty could miss, because we've seen it recently. So
Fulham's keeper didn't have a hat on, though.
That is true.
Did anyone else shit themselves when Sessegnon went down, grabbing his hamstring?
I did a little bit. It definitely.
And then they left him on. I was going to have a fit if they didn't take him off. Like, I was literally standing up, pacing, like, what are you doing? And he made it, but I was not in a good place mentally.
Assumed it was two more months.
Me too. And then he just plays. I'm like, okay. Well,
that's good. That's good.
No, but Sessegnon was good. I think rotating him and giving Perisic some time was good. And I think, you know, like I said, I think it's funny to think – I said it last week. It's funny to think last year we were, you know, semi-reluctantly allowing Sessegnon to keep going. And it's like, okay, it's going good until it's not. And then now he's got some cover and he's just – when he goes out there, he's putting in shifts. And I think that's what, you know – you have that thing of, well, if you're not going to play well, Perisic over here, we know how good he is. So if you want to play consistently, you got to, you know, step your game up. And I think he's been showing that a lot more.
We had a three words on Spurs, our three word review from Wes Poehler on Twitter at Poehler Wes. You need Bentancur. So Jeremy, talk to me about Hot Rod coming back in. I thought he was a very stabilizing presence. I think he allowed PEH to get forward a little bit more in this one. And you know I'm coming to you, Scott, when we get to the PEH goal. But Jeremy, just your thoughts on the Hot Rod and kind of the calming presence I think he brings to the midfield.
You know, it's interesting because the few games before he did have a head injury and then miss a match, a lot of people were calling for Basuma, saying we needed something more in the midfield and maybe it was time for a change and all of that. And then we play without Bentancur. We do have difficulty moving the ball, especially the second half against West Ham. And when he did come in today, it was definitely him at his best. Him, you know, pivoting on the ball, just turning and picking out people and making passes and through balls into the final third. He's definitely a player that when he's on, he kind of does check a lot of those boxes that I think – we're missing in the midfield. And as we all know, we're usually playing with two midfielders. So our midfielders do need to be immense. If any of them are having an off day, we struggle. So Bentancur coming back in, he did show his value. He showed his defensive abilities, but also his ability to get forward in. Man, what a pickup. What a January pickup. I still can't get over that.
He's the reason.
He is the reason. He is a Hot Rod. I had a kind of a revelation watching him, and I want to preface this with I'm not saying that these two players are at all the same caliber, but I'm gonna go Harry Winks here, and I think Hot Rod is the natural next evolution of what we wanted Harry Winks to be that Harry Winks did not grow into. You heard a lot about Harry Winks being a metronome, and that was the sideways passing, and you know that allowed players to get more progressive, but Bentancur does that, but he also looks forward. And when Bentancur passes sideways, he then cuts forward into an open space and fills spaces, whereas Winks would just sit back and almost be another, you know, buffer in that line, but not a good defender. So the defensive abilities that Hot Rod brings, as well as the, you know, just to put his foot on top of the ball for a second and recycle it and get it to, you know, a wing back or get it to Højbjerg, who's streaking forward, just really kind of ramps up this offense. And I think it helps spring the counter even faster because he hits a one touch pass to someone and then it's off to someone else very, very quickly. I just think he's a very calming presence in the middle there. He allows Højbjerg to get forward, and we saw Højbjerg get forward and break the deadlock, scoring the goal in the, I just had it up, but of course I'll drop it there.
37th ish minute.
Yes, sounds sorry right. About that. 40th minute. I got 40th minute. It was assisted by Rich Arlison. A lot of Højbjerg talk on the Blue Bird app. A lot of people, the Højbjerg heroes, I'm going to call it, are getting a bit annoying in this because they're essentially saying that, oh, you know, you can't talk good about him now. So our fan base is just so fickle, man. It fucking pisses me off, like, to the max. You know, I started to buy back in, I think, like two episodes ago. Like, I was like, you know what? I'm good with Højbjerg. I think it was right when Real Madrid started calling. Just absolutely, you know.
Matt had the realization, maybe this guy is pretty good.
I think it was the episode after. The episode before Real Madrid came in is when I had talked about him. So they must have listened Los Blancos were listening to Podspur, and
yeah, somebody starts flirting with your girlfriend, then she's hot again all of a sudden, huh?
Matt's on board. We gotta check this guy out. So, Scott, talk to me about the donkey that we called him during the preseason.
I don't think I was wrong. I don't think we were wrong. The problem with him is he doesn't look like he should be doing those things. Like, he looks like I was talking to a friend of mine. We were watching the game together, and it's like it takes him a second to get going. It's like a pickup truck. Like, you put it in the gear, it's like, and then the top speed is fine, but it's like, yeah, and then he goes. And he's clunky and like a little clumsy, but it works. Like, it's not clumsy and shit like Sissoko. It's clumsy and it works. Like, that goal was a hell of a strike, just like the goal against Southampton? No, yep. Chelsea. It's Chelsea. Wasn't he scored against Chelsea, didn't he? He scored the equalizer. Yeah. He scored to make it 1-1. Hoybjerg did. Right?
Oh, the first equalizer. That might be.
Yeah, the
true.
First equalizer. Yeah.
Yes.
And it just doesn't look like it should look, but it comes off the way it should come off, if that makes sense. You know? Like, he's not slick and he's not a South American or Italian. It's not Hoybjergino. It's like he looks like a donkey, but he runs like a racehorse. Not literally, but like it performance wise.
Well, hey, Vikings aren't pretty, but they get the job done.
It's Barty on the Extra Inch that calls him the cement mixer.
Cement mixer,
right? So, like, I get that, and I think that's what you're saying there as well.
It's a optics and perception, not reality and output. Like, and I'm over it. Like, I never hated the guy, but I never got it. But I was a little bit mistaken, not in how it looks, but in how it looks and how it turns out.
He has also started
noting. Joint high assist man in the Euros, so like he does have that in his locker. Sorry, Jeremy.
No, it's good. The man has started 80 of 82 matches under Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte, and little Johnny in his mom's basement on Twitter knows better. I know he's a flawed player, but why does he keep getting picked by these managers? Well, because we don't have anybody else. Maybe I don't know. I think that he's – I don't know why the Spurs fan base picks players to pick on, and I don't know why he's sort of the most recent, but I don't think he deserves kind of the slagging off he's been getting the last couple of weeks, for sure.
I think that's how it looks. I think that's what it is. It just doesn't – like when he tries something and it doesn't come off, you're like, why – it looked like shit and it went out of bounds. You know, it's not like Bentancur looks smooth, you know. Like when Bentancur does something that doesn't come off, it's like, well – looks like you should be trying shit like that.
Wait, it's Scott, are you saying that a lot of fans can only look about an inch deep? Is that what you're saying? Like, we don't actually
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think most people, when they watch the game, see one player, and it's whoever's touching the ball.
Yeah,
that's all they see. And I'm not like better than that. I do that too. So I don't want it to seem like I'm talking down to anybody. But that I think that's what it is.
Especially us Americans, because a lot of people do imply that we it's just soccer to us, and we only know who's on the ball there. But let's go from one player in Højbjerg that gets a lot of shtick to another player that gets probably even more shtick. Another one of Scott's boys, and Mr. Emerson Royale. Still can't throw a cross in, but I tell you what, he was damn good versus Fulham. He had that silky little let it run through his legs. Defensively, just very, very good again. Dustin, what did you make of the Brazilian?
You know, Emerson... He didn't do anything to make me say what the hell, you know, honestly. But you know, and then you go back and look at you know the stat line like you talked about. He did a lot of things really well. I will say the one place I've really noticed him is the place we talk about where he thrives the most is that's in the defensive box. Like when the danger has come all season in the defensive end, he's been really really good. I mean he won 8 of his 10 total duels. He had 4 clearances and 4 recoveries, and that's really good. You know, his passing was only 79%, but that's okay. He had 2 successful dribbles. He says his accurate cross is 3 of 6. That's an improvement over the, what was it, like 1 of 6 last week. So,
and I want to take a second on his crossing. I think he actually, I don't think it's necessarily that his crosses themselves are shit. I think the timing of them are pretty bad because he puts some balls into some pretty good spots.
But I think he has that stutter step in him. That like, is it because I think he's, we've talked about it, he's a defensive minded player. like he's, I mean, he's a true right back, and we're trying to play him right wing back. And I think that, I think he probably kind of has that hesitancy because he wants to make sure it's right.
No, I hear that. Scott, what are your thoughts on Emerson in this one?
Well, you know, I actually tweeted before the game that I thought he was probably going to end up looking pretty good because he had Richarlison in front of him and Romero beside him. So he's got a good rapport with Richarlison, and Romero kind of covers up for some of his deficiencies. And we had Longley on the other side to help, like I said, to help come up, cover some of the gaps. And I thought,
and I know there's a lot of interplay there, but there's also PEH lines up kind of on that right hand side of the pivot as well. So
right.
he's you know, in there as buffer.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought he looked good. I mean, I know this is probably gonna sound crazy, and maybe I am crazy, but I think in a year, 18 months, hopefully we've got a permanent left sided center back that's not Clement Longley. No offense, I think he's good, but like a Bastoni or someone like a grown man over there, like you don't fuck with. I think Royale might make a good right-sided center back. He's not little. He's over 6 feet tall. He's good in the air. His deficiencies with the ball would look better there, I think, because he's not relied upon as much to do all the things. Like, he's not smaller than Ben Davies, and Davies can do it. What's the difference? And I think he's young and he's still learning, and he can't have Davies and Roy out there. Right. But I think that would be a whole different, I think that's his long-term, especially if he's here with Conte for a while, like the Cesar Azpilicueta type role. I think that could be something that you see with a real wingback out there and next to a Dyer type who can win balls in the air. So you're not relying on him for that.
Right.
You know, Scott, I would rather see Emerson at right center back than I would rather see Kulusevski at right wing back.
Oh yes, yes. I've seen a few of those takes on the socials this weekend, and I don't like that at all. You can't.
It makes me think of that Nick Saban clip, the one where it's like, "I'm not gonna do it, so quit asking me."
So let's get a little bit further up the pitch, and we'll go with Heung-min's son. 84 minutes. Fatmob had him in 8.0. Sonny was lively, unlucky not to score. Jeremy, was this his best performance of the season so far?
Well, I think so, yeah. And, you know, I said to somebody recently, he won the Golden Boot, and then very shortly after that, Spurs went on this, you know, multiple-week tour of Korea, and he was in the limelight. And I think the dude is just burnt out, to be honest. I think he went through sort of a dip in form, there's pressure, there was a lot going on. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of the way that Kane started. I don't know if it was just last year, but right after the Euros, after the championship, when England lost to Italy, Kane was just really out of form for quite a while. Was that just last year?
Yeah, that was last year.
Oh, there
it
was
seems
also
like a long time ago.
There was also the contract stuff with Kane. But point being, there's nothing wrong with Sonny. There's nothing wrong at all. I thought yesterday, because we're recording the day after, I thought that kind of his pace was there. I thought he had his head up. He was pressing hard. He had a lot of good touches, a lot of good opportunities, and multiple shots that I think on another day they're going in. So, you know, when it comes down to it, the guy's going to score his goals. He's going to have what he normally would. He'll have his 15 to 20, and I think they're going to come soon, and they're going to come in clumps. So I am glad that Conte played him. I think he's going to play his way right back into his proper form before we know it here.
I'm with you on that. I think you got to let him play through it. I think if anyone needs a little bit of rest, get Harry some time out. He's going to play a lot of minutes in the World Cup, as is Sonny, as is Richarlison. So, I mean,
and you know,
there are a lot of players that are going to play a lot of minutes, but let's let Sonny figure it out.
I'm speaking of Kane getting some rest. I love that when we went up 2-0, Kane came off like we know Kane wants to play 90 minutes every single week. And we also know that he's got chocolate ankles and that's not practical. So the fact that he came off in what, the 77th minute. Yeah.
Dustin, I screamed at Jose for 18 months to take Kane off once in a while. And he never comes off. So I agree with you there.
Like, I mean, it was good. It's thinking ahead to midweek because, I mean, you know Harry Kane's going to start midweek at Marseille because we're going to talk about it later, but Marseille's not a pushover. But it was good to see him, you know, to come off at that point and to get some rest and think forward. And but that's where Kulusevski came on. He took on the right spot. Richarlison slid over from the right wing to center forward. Ever since, a man that played in this match named Carlos Vinicius was on our team, we haven't had that opportunity to do that.
Yeah,
right.
True.
And you guys know that I feel like we completely wasted Carlos Vinicius other than just playing him in the FA Cup and the EFL Cup.
Don't forget about Marine.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's got a hat trick. Yeah, I got a scarf over my head over here from that night. So that was definitely a night to remember.
There you go. I mean, a keeper in an FA Cup match had a day to remember earlier today. I guess he got red carded for pissing in the hedges during play. I got that alert on my phone in ESPN, and I was just dying.
Was that this morning? I was either leaving church or at lunch when I got that. I'm like, this is awesome.
Either way, pretty epic timing. But Scott, talk to me about Kane. I thought he was very lively. I thought he covered a lot of ground in this one. Obviously, he had the goal, and he did a very good job of, staying even with Sessegnon. Yes, he was past the defender, but he moved with that play beautifully, and then you get him that ball inside the 6-yard, and, it's as done as dusted.
Yeah, I think that he's been playing better. And the issue that I've had with him so far this season is his touch has been a little rusty. Mm-hmm. And that's starting to come around too. Like, his movement's been good and his positioning's been good and his finishing has been iffy, but it's just coming together a little bit slower. But he was good. I mean, his passing is really good and his positioning was good. And I still find myself yelling at the TV sometimes that, like, he drops deep to help the build up play, and then the ball builds up so quickly with Perisic or Sessegnon or Kulusevski, and he's not in the box to finish it. It's like, cross to who? But it's not Kane. Like, that is not a problem. If that's what I'm bitching about, everything's fine. But he was good. He was excellent. And I agree with what you guys said about Son. He could have easily scored two today. He had the one come off the crossbar, and the one was a hell of a save off the deflection.
Leno thought he was playing in the North London Derby.
Ugh. Yeah, it's like he yeah. So the goals are going to come for Son. I just hope I get him in my fantasy team at the right time. I have no doubt about that. So yeah, it was great, and it was good to see Kane get the rest. And I am absolutely in love with Richarlison now.
Like, that's where I wanted to turn next. We talked about him in the opening a little bit, and what he brought. All four of us, you guys all have him, your man of the match. We didn't really speak about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
Scott, like, I think, while you're on the subject with him, I think the goal that wasn't from him, not the one he actually found the back of the net,
the
but that
karate
kick. Oh, my God.
Oh my, that how was did it hit the post like that, by the way?
Yes.
That was – the whole sequence blew my mind. Like, the audacity to do it. The skill to pull it off and how the hell it hit the post like that was mind blowing.
That was one of the prettiest things I've seen on a field that did not, come result off. In a goal.
Right.
Just absolutely unbelievable.
He's such a
live wire. Yeah.
It's like, I can't, he's the archetypical player you don't want to play against and you hate when he's not on your team. He's always in your face. Like, if you're a defender, I can imagine, like, you're just like, you wake up, like, in cold sweats thinking Richarlison's still there because you just turn around with the ball and there he is and he takes it off you, or he kicks you in the dick and you fall over and the referee doesn't call it somehow. It's like, he's always there. And then he's so talented too. Like, his play for Højbjerg's goal, the interplay with Son to create the space for that goal was crazy. Like, it was just, he's so good. He runs so hard. He's got so much skill. He's such a good finisher. Like, he's got all of the things that we need, especially when, like, Kane, it's good for Kane not to have to be the one to lead the press all the time. Like, Kane can kind of drop deep some, and you see that when they play together. He's so good for so many reasons. I love that they spent that money.
I gave a short quote from Conte a little earlier on, but he was also asked, are you surprised with how quickly Richarlison has understood the idea of the team, as he just looks like he fits into the front three very well? And Conte said, I'm using him in all the three positions in the front. A number 9, a number 10, on the right, on the left. In the previous game, he played in Son's position, and today he played in Deki's position. I'm not surprised, but I enjoyed the fact he worked a lot to understand our ideas so quickly. So Conte loves the tactical mind behind Richarlison, and I think just as much as we love watching him. Jeremy, what's the biggest, thing that sticks out to you about Richarlison?
I didn't know he was so good. I really didn't. I mean,
well, Everton will do that to you.
I mean, I can't believe I didn't really want him initially. And just seeing what he can do on the field and the chemistry he has with the other forwards already. I mean, it's Lucas Moura has been here for 35 years and he can't pick out a pass to the other guys. Okay, it's only been two or three. But to see he already knows where Son and Kane are going. And I don't know. I'm definitely kind of in love with the guy.
No, right on. Dustin Dietz on Twitter at Dustin Dietz 18 wrote, Richarlison is pretty good. And that was in response to our 24-hour rule post. Just kind of take a day and you know, what thoughts did you have after the match? And our good friend Ed Brad at Eddie_Brad wrote, Richarlison is going to be a great signing. We are winning games while not playing great and improving game on game. So, you know, praise for Richarlison from everyone. So let's get our Dustin in here. Hop in on the Richarlison party.
Man, it's one of those things. Like, he went from, what was it? Was it he was at Watford and then he went to Everton. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay. And he scored, but then he would like kind of disappear at times. And he just, like I said, he just makes us so much more dynamic because, like you talked about that Conte quote, he can play in anywhere in that front three and he can allow us to change formation and I think the biggest thing for me about him is just the heart and the skill and the tenacity. That's the biggest thing, is he's going to go out there and he's just going to absolutely bust his ass for however many minutes you tell him to go out there and do it. If it's 15, man, that 15 minutes is going to change the match. If it's the full 90, I'm expecting him to create. If it's 75, he's ran himself into the ground and we're going to bring it somebody up to be a change up and he's going to have made an impact on that match. It's just, he's going to make us so much better. He already is making us so much better.
Right. And he passes the optic test. It's just fun to watch. But at the end of the day, it's a 2-1 win. We grab all 3 points. Scott, where does that put us in regards to last season's chase? I know it's a little different right now. You know, as Fulham were a newly promoted side, but I think you had a workaround for that.
Yeah, I lined them up the best I could with who got promoted, who won the, you know, where Norwich. They ended up in the playoff. Yeah. So that was a wash on points, which is fine. We're already up, what, 8, I believe? I don't have it in front of me. I believe we're up 8 points here.
11 points.
We're up 11? Is that right? I have to update it. Yeah.
This was the first match we hadn't picked up points. We hadn't gained any more points on last season, so.
Yeah, the midweek one threw me off.
Yeah.
I'll
get the file updated.
We did drop goals, though, because we beat Norwich 5. By 2. Well, at home it was by 2, so. Yeah.
Fellas, we haven't lost since March. That's a long time. I don't know how I feel about that, though. coming into this week.
It puts that pit in your stomach of,
yeah, it sure does.
When is it going to happen?
Right. And we definitely have a tough opponent midweek. And let's take a short break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the Champions League match midweek versus Marseille. But we'll do that right after this. Welcome back to Tottenham Hotspur. At the midweek, we also did see the end, finally, of the transfer window, the end of silly season, although the rumors are picking back up for January. So definitely want to give a big shout-out to our guy Dustin, who worked the spreadsheets relentlessly and tracked every source and followed every hashtag he could on Twitter. So quiet end to the window. We got our shopping done early, Dustin.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
You know, the last, I know as the window came to an end, there was names flirting around like, you know, Daniel James, is he going to come in? Brian Hill, is he going to come out? Then there was the last 2 days of the window where the departure of Lucas Moura seems like something that was going to happen. And then, you know, you kept on hearing the stuff about Ruslan Malinovsky just really wanting to come to Spurs, but it all ends up being a pretty, you know, comes down to a pretty quiet window. I forget who said it, and Matt, if it was you, I should remember it was you and give you credit. But someone was like, you know, we did our Christmas. It's like we Christmas shopped early. It's like what my grandpa does to me. He takes me out and says, Dustin, go buy your Christmas presents. And then we get done. He goes, how about you just take them home with you? Which, you know, that's what happened since I was 16. So the past 14 years, I get Christmas presents in like mid-November, which is fine because I'll use them. It's kind of nice that way. No, it's kind of nice that way. But my thought for you guys is, you know, what on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you guys give the window? You know, we brought in, while you guys are thinking about that, think about, we signed Christian Romero permanently. We brought in Ivan Perisic and Fraser Forster on a free. Yves Bissouma and Richarlison and Spence and Udogie came in. And then we signed some youngins too. You know, Tyrell Ashcraft came in from Reading. Josh Keeley, a keeper, came in from St. Patrick Athletic in Ireland, I believe that is, or Scotland, one of the two. And
Ireland. Will Lynch. Get your UK right, Dustin.
Yes, I'm sorry. How many countries are in this country? And that's not even one of them. And then Will Lancashire came in from Sheffield United. And then, you know, we had all the loans out. I'm not going to sit here and read all those. Oh, and then I didn't even mention that Clement Langley came in on loan because we talked about him putting. So, Jeremy, let's start with you since, you know, it's been a little bit since we've heard from you because you've been, you know, gallivanting across Europe. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank the transfer window?
I'll give it a strong 8, I think.
We're playing Portnoy rules. You got to put a decimal with it too.
Do I?
You got to.
All right, I will go 8.0. I think that 8.0. What are you doing to me here?
Here's what I think.
I think that as fans, we wanted to fix the team and make us, you know, world class in one window, and it's just nonsense. The amount of players we brought in that are both have the capacity to improve us now and a couple of years down the road is immense. For Tottenham Hotspur, it was a huge window. And the only thing that I was disappointed about was our inability to net Bastoni. That was the guy that I think if we had actually signed him, that would have made this for me a 10 out of 10. What I'm not convinced of is that we had to sign an attacking midfielder. Because never once have I heard Conte say that's what he wanted. So that's the obsession of fans. Oh, we need this. We need that. Maybe we do. And maybe the man wanted that. But I never heard him say it. And we never really seem to get too deep into negotiations with any of them. So who knows?
Scott, will come to you. We got 8.0 for Jeremy. Scott, what do you say? 1 to 10 with a decimal. What is your ranking of this transfer window?
6.9.
Nice.
Only because I thought we could have used – I like Jed Spence, and I think he's going to be a really good player there. I would have liked to see something upgrade the 11 this season there because that was and in my opinion still is our weakest position. Royale's fine, and he's getting better, and, you know, it's one of those things where it's hard to sell assets right now to the continent, so, like – maybe you grin your teeth, bear it, and move on. You can make good money for Royale next summer, just like Reguilon, same thing. So it's okay, but that would have been nice to see. And there weren't a lot of options, so it's not like I'm beating the club up. But if I'm being objective, I would have liked to see a right wing back come in that could make more of an impact right away. And then also, like you've said, the left center back situation is a little bit disappointing. I think we did the right thing to go ahead and get Longley in just to avoid a panic mess of signing some person we've never heard of and trying to, you know, call it a superstar. So it was good, if not a little bit underwhelming, and I like Longley. But otherwise, I mean, you can't really complain. I mean, we've improved the depth and we've improved some starting 11s, but we didn't improve who we had in the starting 11 last season, I guess I'll say. And that'll come. Bissouma might step in as he gets more comfortable. If Spence ever gets in there, that will be a dynamic that we won't quite have seen. And that'll change everything, in my opinion. Once we get a good right wing back in attack, that'll change everything. But due to the timing of it and some of the things that we couldn't get done, 6.9.
Once again, I say, nice. Matt, what about you?
Well, a pretty solid match rating for a player would be a 7. So I'm going to go with the decimal, and I'm going to do it to caveat or go at Jeremy's point, and I'm going to go with a 7.10 because it would have been a 10 had we brought in the 10. So I'm going to add that 10 to the end of my 7. I really think a 10, whether Conte wanted it or not, would have helped us out, allowed for formational changes within games and really kind of provided us with the spark that we need, which, you know, we do see the struggle to get some goals sometimes, as evidenced in that West Ham match. Dustin, how about you? What was your take on it?
Well, I'm going to give it kind of in that neighborhood too, or a little bit kind of in the middle of everybody. I'm going to say about 7.6. Obviously we've ranted about Richarlison. I do love also the Jed Spence move. I did like the ability for us to sell some people. You know, it was good to, you know, as much as I didn't want to see Steven Bergvine go, we got a good price for him. We moved some people around. Cameron Carter-Vickers, we finally got out. Jack Clark, we finally got out. I probably would have, honestly, if we could have sold 100% sold Ndombele, I probably would have gone a little higher because it's time. It needs to go. I mean, he's only scored against Serie C teams. But 7-6, you know, it's strong. And I'm sure you guys saw the quote. Conte said it himself. He seemed happy with the move, but he said it's going to take a few more. I think he said 3 or 4 more transfer windows to really, you know, put us up there. So I think he sees the long-term potential, and I think he's realistic. I mean, it hurts us to say some people who, you know, like to use the word cream when they reference us, like to think that we're going to win everything and this one window fixed it all. But it takes time, and I think Conte sees that, and I think the best thing for us with that is that he's honest with it. He's not a liar, and he's saying it's going to take some time for us to actually get everybody in place. But overall, very, very happy. It beats, you know, the couple of windows where we did, you know, nothing for a long time.
Hey, man, we had to finance that stadium that Jeremy got to enjoy, you know?
That is true. I mean,
one thing.
Beautiful.
I would have liked to see a couple more loans, too, from the younger players. That's nitpicky stuff. Like Harvey White, I really don't like
Harvey White's the one I definitely would have loved to have seen.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I will say I was pleasantly surprised with is how they handled the Brian Hill situation. Like, they scrambled for a bunch of dog shit players, which scared me, but they ended up just not letting him go, which I know pissed Valencia off. But who doesn't love pissing Gattuso off? I was glad that we held on to him. That was well done. Like, so what? You agreed to something, didn't sign anything. I'm sure we told them, yeah, let's try to figure this thing out. And if we don't, right, he's staying. And we didn't, so he stayed. So there's going to come a time when he has to play. And yep, maybe it's one or two games, but him versus who the hell else would even play, probably a kid from the youth team that we don't even know about. That was a shrewd move. So there was some positives, quite a few positives, and we did some things really, really well. It was a good window overall.
You want to know what the biggest positive was about this window?
What's that?
We did not bring in Adama.
Absolutely.
That's true.
We would have been under a 5 if the oil tanker would have been in there.
Oh, don't worry. Go. He'll be back in January because he'll be down to what, like 3 months on his contract? I'm
gonna Bosman. Actually, oh.
And Wolves will be kind of dipping slightly above the relegation line, I think. But let's talk about some of those players that we were able to loan out really quickly. And let's first start with the star boy, who had his first brace, his first professional man of the match. Gattuso's hopping.
That was the one I had loaded up. You said star boy, and I had to have.
And there goes our copyright license.
Oh, God.
But Dane Scarlett with a brace, a beautiful goal, a nice diving header. There's a Pompey put out a great Photoshop edit of that, so you could add your own backgrounds to it. Some cool edits on there. Got his first man of the match as they win 2-1 versus Peterborough. He now has 3 goals and 1 assist in 7 matches in League One. So very exciting to see his development, and cool that we're able to get videos so quick of all of his goals. Giovanni Lo Celso also scored today, Sunday, for Villarreal as they defeated Elche 4-0.
I hope you guys appreciated me recording my television to send that to you all also.
Yes. So as Dustin brings that up, if you're listening to this and you're not, we've had a really awesome Discord channel going right now. It's a great group chat. It's about 30 Spurs fans, predominantly from the U.S., but all over. I'm going to add that link to our link tree. So if you're interested in joining a really good group chat and connecting with other Spurs fans, click the link in this episode description. You can get in there. Giovanni Lo Celso, as I mentioned, got the goal for Villarreal as they defeated Elche 4-0. And Destiny Udogi scored again for Udinese in their 4-0 win over Jose and Roma. I saw an incredible stat on Udogi today that he is one of two, I believe, defensive players that has 10 goal contributions this season. So the other one is the kid named Rom, who Tottenham were linked to earlier in the season window as well. Liverpool had actually called on him, but just really good stats from Udogi so far. I think he's going to be an instant impact coming back in next season for us. I think it's only the 1 year alone. He's a unit. He's fast and he's fun to watch too. So
you forgot the other one, Matt. Midweek, Joey Roden.
Oh yes,
against Brest.
Joey Rodon did also have that goal. And then also worth noting, if you go and read, some comments, he's with Nice, right? Yeah. If you go read comments on their post match tweets, their fans fucking hate him already. They're like, he's commonly being spelled out in French as the worst defender a lot of them had ever seen.
Oh my god!
So go check out some Ren.
Poor guy.
Especially when Ren loses, go check out their post match tweets and just read the comments. Turn your translate on.
Statistically, he's not having a bad year.
They don't like him. They do not like him. He must have dropped the aliens line.
Apparently, only Swansea loves him.
But all right, so we move on to Champions League on Wednesday. It's a home match versus the toughest pot four team I think that we could have drawn in Marseille from France. Marseille are currently unbeaten in six matches in Ligue 1, or the Uber Eats Ligue 1. They are 5 wins and 1 draw, 13 goals and 3 allowed. So a pretty offensively potent team. Old West Ham player Dimitri Payet still lurks around for them. But this is a tough and scrappy team. They're always up near the top of Ligue 1, you know, most seasons. They do have a couple down years every now and then, but
have they played a team that's not just a bunch of farmers, though?
Oh, great. I mean,
they have a 3-0 win over Nice.
Oh, God.
They have a 2-0
win. No, that's a good note.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So I'm just asking because sometimes it's just curious to see who they play if I've heard of the team.
Oh, I hear you. They have not played PSG yet, if you're getting for that. But Scott, they brought in Nuno Tavares, I believe, last year, who's a really talented defender. Alexis Sanchez is there. So another former Gooner.
And then
Guendouzi's there. Dimitri Payet.
Yeah.
There are a lot of familiar names you'll see on this Marseille team. It's not going to be any walk in the park for sure. But as far as from a Spurs perspective, what are you hoping to see for this one, Scott?
I'm curious to see what Conte does rotation-wise. Surely Skip won't start. I mean, that Skip will probably appear, I imagine, because he's been on the bench for the past couple of games. But I'd like to see Skip get some minutes. And it'll be, you imagine, Kulusevski will start, obviously, given that he didn't today.
Yeah.
And Kane will start, given that he came off. But whether Richarlison or Son starts, you got to assume it's Son, just given that it's first Champions League game. And I assume it'll be Højbjerg, and Benson Kerr in midfield. I think it'll be an unchanged, pretty much what we expect.
I think Perisic comes back in for Cesc. Yeah. I think he gets a start.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, I was the comment that I had trying to think back today, and my question was like, I don't think they're, I'm going to call it a position group because I don't have a better name for it. There's not a single one of our position groups where I can say there's a 100% chance that it's this group and it's no questions asked, because I'm like, I could see some tweaks in the front three, you know, starting Kulusevski and, you know, deciding maybe to rotate there. You know, you could talk about, you know, the left wing back position. I would bet we're going to see Emerson Royale, but the left wing back thing is open for discussion. And then you know, Scott makes a good point about Skip, and, you know, it's some, you know, maybe you give Clement Longley a chance at the center back role.
Well, Royale has to be rotated eventually, right? Like that, he's played every minute just about.
Yeah. I'm just trying to read between some of these lines of some contact quotes about he likes Spence and he's developing, but it's just
no. It'll be Doherty, I think, before it's Spence.
Ah, see, that's a good shout. I've sometimes forget about the man named Matt Doherty.
Who hasn't?
Well, he's been away for so long. What a 6 weeks it was though when he was firing on those.
Oh,
6 days.
Oh man, unreal.
I don't think that he's dead and buried by any means. I know you didn't.
I don't
mean
either.
But he was good. You know what's interesting about this game? Marseille has been in some upheaval. So Jorge Sampaoli was their manager, and he quit in the summer because he was pissed about the Saliba situation. with letting him go back to Arsenal. So he just quit, and they and he's a good manager. And they replaced him with Igor Tudor, I believe is his name. And he has pissed everybody off already, apparently. Like, the fans hate him. Payet's not playing very much, and he's the best player. The fans love him. He, like, replaced all the coaches in the offseason. He's already fired one of his own coaches that he brought with him, and he just got there in July. So apparently it's a little bit of a mess, which gives me a lot of pause, because this is prime Dr. Tottenham shit. Like, oh, you think you're falling apart? Yeah.
Here comes the choo-choo.
Here comes the latex, baby.
Jeremy, what are you hoping to see in that
All I can think of right now is the fact we lost to a team whose manager was in prison as he's going through that. I mean, I love this club.
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
While watching, like, dodgy streams and all of our internet's getting hacked. And...
Oh, that was one of the worst.
I was watching the school internet, so my internet got hacked.
Yeah, the one power cord that went into that stadium, some rat chewed on during the match, and the whole stream cut.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, we're back in the Champions League. It's a special night to be back and to have that, you know, rightly where it belongs in our stadium. As far as what Conte rotates, I just kind of feel like he's going to run our players into the ground by the World Cup and then say to the international managers, here you go. Because he doesn't seem like he really wants to rotate all that heavily yet. As Scott said, he'll probably have to, but I'm not so sure that he's ready to really do that heavily. So, you know, here's what I'll say, and then I'll just let it go. I think we're going to learn a little bit how he'll treat the Champions League, because the game against City, the two only unbeaten teams in the league, is coming up 3 days after that. So what sort of emphasis will Conte put on that? And will there be any decisions made, any sacrifices made with that coming up? You know, he is a manager that typically really cares about winning the league. So we'll learn a lot, I think, midweek. But I don't have many predictions to make. I'm just not so sure.
I'm glad you brought up the only two unbeaten teams, because the team at the top of the table can just cry more for all.
Heyo,
yeah.
I'm really excited for Wednesday. I love the all white uniforms. The return of the white shorts. You know, at home, I think it's just a touch of class. I can hear the Champions League theme playing right now, and I got the goosebumps. I'm ready. Ooh. I'm ready for it. I might go Danny Rose and crush a Heineken. No, I'm in. I'm ready for it. Go ahead, Dustin.
Did you all see the video online of all the Man United fans at the pub celebrating? And there was the one Spurs guy that put up the back. I'm like, that they were they were happy for that guy. They let him come in and party.
That guy shags. He shags.
Indeed.
But all right, guys, this was definitely a fun one. We covered a lot of ground here. You know, depending on where we're at, maybe we can get an episode out midweek, as you know, we can look at what happens in Champions League versus Marseille and then preview that very tough match with City coming up on the weekend. So, again, that about wraps things up for this episode. Thanks for coming back to Podspur. We appreciate your support. Again, if you're not already, check out all of our accounts on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Follow each of the guys and check out our blog and website at podspur.com. And just a reminder, you can get a quick access link to all of those links in one neat location. Hit that link tree in this episode description. The Discord chat will be in there. You can go shop on Fanatics as well to help support us. Come join the Discord. There is a lot of Discord in there. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of stupid gifts, but we love it. You know, it's good stuff. If you enjoyed the show, also please leave us a rating and review on whichever podcast platform you listen to. 5 stars goes a long way to helping supporters find the show. So for Jeremy, Scott, and Dustin, thanks again for tuning in. I've been your host, Matt. We'll see you next time. And as always, come on, you Spurs.